Hello, and welcome to At Your Instep. My name is Morgan, and I'm here with Mike.
Hello.
And we have another fun-filled episode for you folks this week.
What do we have?
An episode.
A poo-poo-poo-sode.
Listen, sometimes...
We've got another fun-filled hippopotamus for you here today.
Sometimes when you're saying words, and then you have a little tiny burp, and it just makes you stutter a little bit. So.
Oh, but you get that cool one, like, episode.
No, epiposode. So obviously we have the entire sort of Throne of Eldraine card list available to us, and I know that everyone's pretty excited for, you know, all of the things that are going to be happening over the weekend, especially with pre-releases and being able to pick up boxes and then opening disappointing collector's booster packs.
Did you see the container for that? For the collector's edition, the giant, it's like a book and it's like a giant box and you open
it.
The two foils.
Yeah, the super special edition that they talked about on weekly MTG.
The best thing on Twitter was definitely someone comparing that to the picture of the ball pit from Cardmageddon.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it's shockingly similar.
It was at Manicurves did that.
It's very nice. It's very good. Very much, I know, I think their tweet was like, same energy.
Same energy, yeah, very true. It very much was.
Very true. But before we jump into all of that, I do want to give a quick shout out to our lovely patrons over at our Patreon. You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/@yourendstep. And again, thank you so much for contributing. You folks help keep the lights on and the show going, so we appreciate it.
And look at us, 2 weeks in a row. I mean, like...
Yeah, clearly you are getting what you paid for. And however you want to take that.
The rails are back on, baby.
So, obviously, some of you might be expecting a Palooza-esque episode. But we've made the executive decision here at your NSIP Incorporated that due to time constraints and general mental health, like mental wellness is probably the better term, that it's probably not good for us to
sleep
to continue to have, you know, 2-3 hour episodes talking about every single card.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, because you mentioned that, and like I had been thinking about it, like Morgan like texted me, he's like, hey, what if we just did what we're going to talk about here shortly? And I was like, I'm so glad that we definitely are in sync on that, but we've got to get up, we have to have a better name. Like if like a Palooza was a full on set like review,
right?
Then like what is? I'm looking here at thesaurus.com for some synonyms for celebration.
Sure,
jubilation.
Oh,
Throne of Eldraine jubilation.
That feels very flavorful for the set. Even
I do like that. Oh, how about this? A frolic. a merriment?
Ooh.
That one's real good.
That one's very spot on, actually.
A remembrance doesn't seem so great. Ooh, a Saturnalia.
I can't say that one. That'd be all you, bud.
A jollification? A hullabaloo is not bad.
Hullabaloo's good. We're getting further away from the source material of Eldraine, though.
Jubilee, I mean, that got the same as jubilation. It's good.
Yeah.
Gala doesn't seem like what we're about.
You know what? I'm ready to vote for Frolic.
I like Frolic.
Yeah.
Okay. So this new format, at least for this one, because we're on, this is the Throne of Eldraine
Frolic. Correct. So we decided to kind of take the heavy hitters, the things that we expect to impact Modern, Standard, as well as Brawl, because we're really truly trying to embrace that format, and I think it's something that we're going to be talking a lot more of now that it's getting pushed a little bit to the forefront, especially with Throne of Eldraine. And honestly, like doing the Brawl Invitational that just happened was like some of the most fun I've had playing Magic in quite some time. So I think like that's where I need to sort of chase my bliss, as it were. So, and I know there's going to be plenty of people that will chase it along with me in our playgroup. So we're going to have a top 10 list for each, as well as some honorable mentions for each of them.
But should we point out, top 10 is maybe a bit of a misnomer.
Sure.
We're not going to count them down.
We both made our
list of like, these are the 10-ish cards we think are good, and then we got some chocolate in each other's peanut butter.
All right. You got something?
We have three goobers.
Correct. So we have three goobers.
We have three goobers equal to 10.
Correct.
So you know, we got some peanut butter and jelly just mashed right in there together. So.
Right. And what we tried to do is if we're going to talk about a card in another section, we tried to shift it over to that section to make more room to talk about, you know, cards that we think will only, you know, touch into standard. And then focus on, like, maybe some standard implications for some of the modern cards, but mainly focus on
We try to make it so, like, you said, the list didn't overlap, so there may be...
Yeah,
like,
we just want to be able to talk about more cards. That's pretty much the gist
more
of it.
More cards, but not... But a frolic amount of cards.
Yeah,
not a palooza.
No.
Hey, if the United States of America is not getting on the metric system, then I am okay with using obtuse forms of measurement.
100%.
I don't know how many frolics are in a palooza.
No idea. A plentiful amount, one would have to imagine, though. There are a handful of things that happened in the community of that last week, but we'll probably cover those next week. It's nothing too dire. My phone's actually updating right now, so I can't actually check.
Here's the thing off the top of my head. I don't know about anything specific.
I just feel like there was...
We did have the change to the banner restrict, or like banner or players. I'm sorry, I was going to say that.
Yes.
They're not showing that anymore. I think we'll save that one and actually talk about it, though.
Yeah,
I think that's a big one.
I know that we had some special invites for the next Mythic Championship.
Yeah, most of those, like, those were pretty cool. Looked like it was a good list. So.
And we'll talk about that, all that
stuff.
It was
Aaron Barish, I think, was one of them.
And for sure, and Newmont the Nummy, I know.
Yep, I'm glad with that, too.
Caleb Durward, as well.
Yeah, his history was pretty cool.
Okay,
we can talk about that next week, then, too.
Yeah, for sure.
So, because that's coming up.
Yeah, 100%. But let's just go ahead and jump into a frolic of Eldraine.
Well, we could just frolic.
Frolic to Eldraine, yes. So we're going to talk about standard first, and we'll start with our honorable mentions, just because these are ones that I know we like, and will have, you know, kind of impacts to the format, but aren't necessarily super exciting to talk like a lot about. So the first one that I wanted to bring up was Acclaimed Contender, which is a three mana knight creature. It has, when it enters the battlefield, if you control another knight, you look at the top, five cards of your library, and you can pick a aura, a knight creature, or...
Just a knight.
Just a knight, okay.
So, and I think that, because it's a knight, aura, equipment, or legendary artifact card.
Yes.
So, it could be a... tribal changeling card.
yes, theoretically. So this kind of does, and it's a 3/3 for 3, just on its face value. So it kind of does a little bit of a militia bugler sort of impression. Definitely has a lot more targets.
Is that the impression that you get?
That is the impression that I get. Bow,
bow, bow, bow. I've never knocked. Anyways, this card did not make my initial list, and it's only because of the first clause. It's if you control another knight.
Right.
You know, we compare this to Militia Bugler. That card just came in and triggered.
Yes.
If we look over to Modern, like Knight, it was a Knight Captain of Eos, mm-hmm. right? Just triggers. If this just came in and triggered, it would have been my top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
But requiring another knight, not that that's not doable. There's plenty of good 1- and 2-drop knights you can have in this set, but it makes this less of an exciting draw off the top because, like, you know, if you're behind, like, and you drew Militia Bugler, then you may have drew, you know, okay, good, 2-for-1. Mm-hmm. You draw this, you're like, I drew Centaur Courser. And I think that's the only thing that sort of stops me here with putting this card, you know, in a top 10 scenario. But I do like it. In a dedicated knight's deck, like, this is good value and, like, lets you run, like, maybe that one of... The equipment theme here feels pretty subtle in knights, but there are a couple of pieces of equipment that I think are pretty close. Everclave being the one that comes out to me, and maybe you only run one, but then you get to run four of this, and you have a higher chance of finding it consistently. So
yeah, I only put it on there just because like they are pushing knights to some degree. So if you want to brew in that pathway, like you have this kind of card that kind of allows you to do that. So.
Yeah, for sure.
The next one is Iron Crag Pyromancer. Do you want to take that one?
Yeah, Iron Crag Pyromancer is definitely an interesting one as I'm getting to my eyes. This is where I'm at. What the heck? There we go. It is a 2 generic and a red for a 0/4 creature human wizard. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, Iron Crag Pyromancer deals 3 damage to any target. This is a spicy card.
Yeah.
And I don't know... I don't know if it's like perfect or just outside where I want to be. You know, when you look at that triggered ability, we actually saw it in Cube a little bit this last weekend. Morgan, mm-hmm. you played with the blue Flash Flyer that gets yeah. a counter when you draw a second card. And if you build your deck so you're drawing extra cards, it's surprisingly easy to trigger on your turn.
Right.
And if you know that you're triggering this consistently, the card gets much better.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know, you know, it may draw a lot of comparisons to something like Gutter Snipe or something like that. You know, it is a, you know, a card that sits there and can has threatens a lot of damage, right? And especially when you look at, it's going to be played in a deck that's probably going to have a lot of instants or sorceries, going to, you know, theoretically draw you a lot of cards. And I think the immediate thing you think of is it Phoenix in Standard,
100%.
Right? So I don't know if that deck still exists. It definitely seems that it could have a decent enough mana base, you know. You have two sets of rare duels, so you have the Scryland and you have Steam Vents. We did get, you know, another card we're going to talk about here is another fixer for it as well. And you are losing some amount of things, though, which is kind of difficult. You know, you're losing one of your Drakes, for sure.
The worst Drake.
The worst one, yeah. It's still definitely a threat.
Yeah, for sure.
And you're losing Charter Course.
That's probably bigger than the actual Drake yes. at this point. Let's examine this in two ways, because I have another set of honorable mentions I want to tag in with this, which is Throw a Possibility in the Royal Scions, because yeah. I had tag teamed those up. But I do want to address this card in context of removal, because Standard's removal is getting a little worse, because you're losing both Lightning Strike and Wizard's Lightning.
Yes. So three toughness has a little bit more stability. You still have Skewer the Critics.
Yeah, you have, well, you have Skewer, you still, for this creature, you still have Lava Coil, which is important.
Yes.
But it depends on what the other decks are doing. You know, obviously the three mana, the creature we're going to talk about, the Rider,
yeah.
is a real piece of removal. But like, if those decks are also going to lean on things like what we've seen in this format, like Legion's End, this is good against Legion's End. Disfigure, pretty good against Disfigure. So I think like that gives you some pause. It can block pretty effectively. Mm-hmm. And it also passes the Giant test, which is another card we'll see in our top 10. So those all seem good to me, even when we're doing that Gutter Snipe comparison. Sorry about that. The other cards that I want to mention then being the Royal Scions, a Throw of Possibility. Throw of Possibility is Tormenting Voice, but as an instant.
Yes.
And being an instant is important because, one, we thought that Phoenix was going to lose all of its discard outlets by losing Tormenting Voice. Well, Throw gives it still another one of those options.
Yeah.
But you can also cast on your opponent's turn and trigger this Pyromancer.
Yeah.
And then the Royal Scions is a one generic red-blue for a three, or no, four loyalty planeswalker. I guess I shouldn't just guess. But that ability of looting that is tacked onto that as its mm-hmm. initial tick up always triggers on your turn. Then it'll always make the Pyromancer trigger on your turn. Now that's a lot of three drops
for sure
to be fighting for space. But you know, that's your draw discard for your Phoenix. That's your trigger for this. You know, that sounds like a stew.
Yeah.
Now I don't know how good that stew's going to taste.
No.
Okay. There's a lot of food in El Drain. So
yeah, that's very true. But you know, people like playing those decks. So it's like people are going to try it. You know, people are going to try to pursue it for sure. So it just kind of depends on how the format, you know, shapes out. But, you know, people love, Arclight Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. This guy right here included.
So people love that kind of deck. And as long as that card exists within the format, that people are going to try to brew with it. And especially when you get a lot of good blue-red sort of tools to use, then people are going to try it.
Sorry, the Royal Scion starts at 5 loyalty, so
yeah,
it takes
five,
up
okay.
to 6. And I also want to mention the Royal Scion's second ability is +1, target creature gets +2/+0, and gains first strike and trample until end of turn. Do you know who loves that ability? Crackling Drake.
Yes.
Oh man, does Crackling Drake love that ability.
Yeah, it's like
first strike, trample, yeah, I'm coming
please.
In. So,
please.
You saw people playing Crash Through, you know what I mean, as a cycler, but also like that trample was super important in some games.
Yeah.
So, and you also saw people playing Warlord's Fury at different times because, you know, so like now it's like, just
all of it. Just all of it.
So I think like the Royal Scions could be good in that deck. It just really depends on what it's doing, honestly, on turn two. Like, that's, I think, is going to make a lot of difference for a deck now that you don't have Charter Course. So
that's very true. And then the last one that I want to talk about is Opt. It's a reprint, but it means that Opt is going to obviously stay within the Standard format, which, again, I think helps those kind of, you know, blue tempo decks.
Tempo desks.
So like we're going to talk about another card that kind of lends itself to building like a new kind of tempo deck. And maybe that's the thing that you're doing on turn two potentially, but maybe that's too early. I think plays into a lot of that, and it's a good card to continue to have access to in the standard.
Yeah, I like seeing it now a couple of sets. It seems like that they've just like throwing that in there with like duress and things like that. I think that,
yeah, it's just sort of the it's a fair cantrip that can consistently exist within the format.
Right.
So that's all of our honorable mentions for standard. Let's get to the real cards. So the first one we want to talk about is Realm Cloaked Giant. So this is...
Ho, ho, ho. Realm Cloaked Giant.
This is a... it's a adventure card. So it has, sort of two cards in one. The first one that we want to talk about is obviously the Realm Cloaked Giant. It is a 5 generic white-white for a 7/7 Vigilance Creature Giant. It's a mythic rare. But there's also a sorcery on it called Cast Off, which is 3 generic white-white. It says destroy all non-giant creatures. So this is our this is sort of our wrath of this format. We still have some
Kaya's Wrath.
Mm-hmm. We have
Planar Cleansing.
And like sort of the black ones that are like -X/-X. So we have Cry the Carnarium. And then we have Ritual of Soot.
We also have like Deafening Clarion.
Yeah.
So
on the
flame,
other
flame sweep,
mm-hmm, the other
but
the really weird red white one that deals
Solar Blaze.
Yeah, Solar yeah. Blaze.
So, Solar Blaze. Sorry. I want to point something out because yes, this is our 5 mana Wrath, which is interesting. It really will depend on like giants that we see play in the format, and there are a couple at least outside of this one, at least one that looks like it's going to see play. About. So that'll be dependent there, because if your red opponent has that giant in play every time you cast this spell, then you're probably not excited about this.
Yeah, it's going to feel pretty bad.
But if this is consistently 5-mana Wrath that you get to play a finisher later off of, I mean, that's the kind of card advantage a control deck's looking for.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a free 2-for-1.
I want to make sure I'm not crazy on this. This is a creature in your hand, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it can't be duressed?
Correct.
That seems really important. Because that's one of the ways that decks will get around. Like, all right, I'm going to duress or your wrath spell. Well, duress isn't going to hit this one. Right. And I think that's a pretty interesting piece of protection for your wrath spell that you've never had before, really. Yeah. Desolation Angel or whatever.
I mean, you could technically look at like Elesh Norn being that, but not even really in the same realm.
We had the Awakening Sun's Avatar. In sure. The last one. But yeah, so I think it's important. Like, this is a 5-mana Wrath that like is a spell but can't be duressed, and I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how. I mean, a 7/7 with Vigilance is also just pretty nice. It's definitely a nice clean 3-turn clock. So
it is. It's important to note that. How much of a clock this really is going to depend on how many times your opponent can shot block it.
That's very true too.
So like that's an important thing to really consider. But I think like you're definitely playing in this in your deck for the adventure. The creature is just like icing on the cake.
And it really is. This is a very nice like look at like how nice of a 2-for-1 adventures can be.
Exactly. So you can take the next one, Brazen Borrower.
Oh man, speaking of adventures, this mm-hmm. I gotta say, this is the card I am most excited for in this set. Like I know that some people were maybe not very high on Brazen Borrower, but man, I think you're just crazy and wrong if you were like, this is average. This is one blue for a 3/1 fairy rogue. It has flash and flying, and Brazen Borrower can block only creatures with flying. And then it has an adventure, Petty Theft, for a generic and a blue instant. Return target non-land permanent and opponent controls to its owner's hand. I think the play pattern with this card is going to, be honest, piss people off real quick. And again, we keep alluding to the giant. We'll talk about it soon. But those two cards, I think, are really going to tell us what this format's doing. Because you make a play on turn two, I'm gonna play this on turn two and bounce it. And then I have a flash creature sitting there. I might have a counterspell on turn three. You won't know. Don't play into the counterspell. I have a 3/1. Play into the counterspell? Cool. I still have a 3-1 waiting. I think the play patterns of this card are disgusting, and I think it's very, very good.
Yeah.
I had this one on my modern list as well. Like, I think the only thing that hurts it in modern, I think, is it's a fairy rogue, not a fairy wizard.
Yeah.
Because if it was a wizard, you would see it more. But I think this has, I was going to say legs, but I guess wings.
Yeah.
In other formats.
Yeah, and I can definitely respect that. I think if you take both these cards separately, right, you take, like, what? It's Disperse. Petty Theft. And then, like, Brazen Borrower, it's, like, kind of a weird Vendilion Click-esque creature.
It's a Flash Rishadan Airport. Or
Airship.
Airship. I was going to say Airport. That's not right. Rishadan Airplane.
So you take both of them separately, like, none of those are, like, you know, breaking the bank in Standard, right?
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, for sure.
So obviously, the power of this card comes from the versatility of it. The ability to have both these things in one card and have the flexibility of having access to both of these at any given point in time. You know, right. Sometimes you may just like flash in a threat and at the end of your turn it just start going to town. Like, it's a 3-1, it's a clock.
100%.
And I know that I was listening to Arena Decklist, and they were talking about this card, because I was one of those people that was like, I don't know why this is a mythic. Like, it just, like, rings discordant in your head a little bit. But they're like, you know, this card, it tells you what it wants you to do. It wants you to attack, because it can only block things with flying, so it probably means you're going to be attacking with it in the first place. And it would be very upsetting if this card didn't have that line of text, by the way. Just in case you were wondering, like, you should be very happy that it can't block non-flyers, because that would be even worse.
Consistent blowouts.
Yes.
So,
but yeah, I think this card is definitely powerful. It probably rubs a lot of people the wrong way, because this is such a blatant, like, constructed all-star.
Yeah, no, the whole like, what a mythic is, you just have to ignore that for now.
No,
it's true.
And, like, I can understand them not wanting this to show up a lot in, like, limited games, because I'm sure that's probably pretty frustrating, because it's going to be frustrating enough in constructed
games.
It's definitely
good in limited. I think constructed, it's play pattern. Like, I think you got to look at, like, even, like, Blue-Green Flash to start, because this card sits there in the offense adventure as a rattlesnake, and that's not how this card should, like, but it's how it operates. But also, when you look at the format in large, you know, got a Narset sitting there stopping you from drawing cards. Let's flash this in and get rid of it. Somebody attacking your Planeswalker, you want to reset it? Let's bounce it back. Yeah, like that. The flexibility that this card represents is just,
yeah.
It's probably, like, not great. I don't know how much paper Standard I'll play throughout all this.
Yeah,
but I have to assume that both in paper and on Arena, this is the card in Eldraine that I plan on casting the most.
Yeah.
Where I'm at.
Knowing you, I believe it.
Like, I can use this to bounce something to bring back my phoenixes, and then still have a creature waiting for when they kill my phoenixes. Like, oh, okay. Here's another one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting time.
I love this card.
It's important to note that, obviously, like, Teferi will still exist in the format, so, like, that's still a thing that you have to, like, consciously play around. Cast your
Zalfair, don't care.
Cast your Brazen Borrower while Teferi is on the stack if you want to flash it in at the end of turn, which may be awkward because then they can bounce it.
You're right, Morgan. They should have made a Venser.
Please don't make this card better than it needs to be. I'm just saying, like, these are certain things you're going to have to be aware of when you're playing this card.
Yeah,
since
absolutely.
We do have, like, that awkward Planeswalker still in the format.
That's
so true.
Next
up is... another adventure card. Surprising, these 2-for-1s. They're just the best cards you can be playing in Standard. So we have Murderous Rider. It's one generic black for a creature, Zombie Knight. And it has lifelink and says, when Murderous Rider dies, put it on the bottom of your library instead. Or bottom of its owner's library. And it's a 2/3. All right, well, that's kind of a boring creature. Let's talk about the adventure it has, which is Swift End, which is one black for an instant adventure. Destroy target creature or planeswalker, you lose 2 life. All right, so Hero's Downfall, bad Hero's Downfall, quote unquote.
It's got the inverse of Rask's Contempt, like,
yes,
attached to it.
And just a, like, kind of serviceable creature attached to it, which is perfectly fine because you're definitely playing this because it's just Hero's Downfall.
Yeah, sometimes you get to put them back in your deck, so that's
it's pretty neat. Probably better than them going to your graveyard where you can get them back with like Raise Dead effects.
That's pretty true, I suppose. Hey, what's the deal with this guy's name? It says it's Murderous Rider.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, I gotta do that. What's the deal with
what's
Murderous
the deal?
Rider? He's got so many arrows sticking at him. He should have been called Murdered Rider. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, he is a zombie, so. Huh?
Anybody high five for that?
No.
High five?
Put it down.
Oh, all right.
This is just, you know, the quintessential removal spell for the format.
Yeah, no,
right?
100%.
Like, do you remember, were you playing in Theros when Hero's Downfall was legal? Yeah, it's that.
It certainly is. The two life thing, though, it is a little bit more punishing.
Yes.
You know, if you are playing against an aggressive deck and you're waiting till turn three to cast this as your first removal spell, yeah, and you may not be feeling so good.
I still think that was even true with
Hero's Downfall.
Hero's Downfall,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely, it was. So it's just something to consider. But the nice thing is, you do have the option of then playing a lifelink creature to go with
100%.
It.
So that, you get back that life.
That does help.
Yeah, so. And like again, you know, we are going to go back to like three toughness is different than it used to be.
It certainly is. We just don't have Lightning Strike and Wizard's Lightning just hanging around. So
yeah,
that's important.
That is very important.
Let's Let's talk about that red giant we've been alluding to.
The angry red giant.
The bone crusher.
I would not call him jolly.
Yeah, no, not at all. This is like the juggernaut like of Magic cards. Like his helmet fell off and he's mad. Bone Crusher Giant is a 2 generic and a red for a 4/3 giant. Whenever Bone Crusher Giant becomes a target of a spell, Bone Crusher Giant deals 2 damage to that spell's controller. Nice. And then it has an adventure spell, Stomp. This is making music with brooms.
Yes, you're correct.
Jericho red for an instant. Damage can't be prevented this turn. Stomp deals 2 damage to any target.
So, shock plus.
So, like with Brazen.
4/3.
Yeah, just like with Brazen Borrower, like, you better play a 2-drop that can survive this, because, oh boy, I'm going to end a turn, kill your 2-drop, and then on my turn, I'm going to cast Bone Crusher Giant.
Yeah.
And I've only used 1 card. I'm a red deck. And then if you kill this, if you target with spell, you're just going to take 2 more damage. That's bonkers to me.
Yeah.
But I even think like that damage can't be prevented this turn is a really interesting piece of text because that sets up some really cool plays now that we have protection back in the format.
Yeah.
You know, if people are boarding in, well, it's what Drake is it? It's the
Cerulean Drake.
Cerulean Drake. You know, you can set it up so like, okay, well, they're blocking here, right? And then you can cast this, on one of the other creatures, and then damage can't be prevented. And guess what? Their protection from red creature is still going to die in those blocks.
100%.
So I think that's that's a line that, I mean, let's be honest, especially players who have only learned through Arena, well, protection just came back for them, like, so it's new.
Yeah.
This, I think, the first time they see this happen is going to, like, either A, they're going to figure it out and go, oh, this is awesome, or it's going to happen to them and I'm going to be mad for a little bit, but then they're going to go, okay, this is awesome. So it's a cool way to play with protection creatures as well.
Yeah, it's something that you see this in Modern. Like, you can see this in Modern with Skullcrack.
100%.
And like, blocking, getting your burn creatures blocked by, like, a Core Firewalker or a... Orion champion, and then doing a skull crack, doing one of them skull cracks, So this is going to be a new sort of play pattern that we may or may not see within Standard, which is kind of interesting. But then, like, you're in the mono red decks, so the red decks in general, you are losing something like a Chain Whirler, so you have like this empty spot for like
Ferocidon technically,
and Ferocidon now, I guess. So you have this kind of open slot for a pretty potent 3-drop, which this slots into very nicely, and it kind of being able to pull double duty is pretty good. Yeah, I know. Is pretty great.
Have you seen the size of this giant? He definitely has double duties. That's a poop joke.
Quality content right here.
In the diaper.
But it's also important to note that this, is... way more splashable than something like a Chain Whirler.
100%.
So, like, obviously, we're talking about this in like a mono red aspect, but you could see like a Gruul deck or something like that. Be able to take advantage of using this card. So.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I really like it. I don't. It, as far as like high ranking adventure cards, it is up there with Brazen Borrower and Murderous Rider. So, all right. Next up, Feasting Troll King. So Feasting Troll King is two generic in four trees, so green, for a troll noble. It was a 7/6. He has Vigilance Trample. It says, when Feasting Troll King enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand, create three food tokens. Then it has sacrifice three foods, which is such a weird, like, you expect to see be food tokens, but it's foods, because we have other things that are
other
food.
Things that are food, yes.
Return Feasting Troll King from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate this only during your turn, which is not the same as activate this only this at time you can cast a sorcery, which is important to point out. So for some reason, you can do this at instant speed if you wanted to during your turn. So I don't know if that's relevant or not, but could be, I guess. And also, it's just like 7/6 you can just get randomly out of your graveyard, which is probably the more important part. There have already been some people brewing with decks that, you know, achieve to do that via getting various food throughout, you know, the game, and then suddenly having a 7/6 early, you know, probably before turn 6. When you can realistically cast this card.
Yeah, and just like keep putting out. Like, it's obviously teams with like Oko.
Yes.
It's if you can have a steady stream of food.
I mean, who doesn't want that?
Yeah, and then you can play a little bit of self mill with this. You can do. There's a lot of gross things with this, and that recursion is tough. Like, yeah, like a 7/6 is whatever. Maybe it's kind of derpy. I don't know. Maybe the first time. Maybe the second time. Maybe the third time.
Yeah, many times are you going to be able to clear this from the battlefield?
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, if you have a good food engine,
an oven or a microwave?
Specifically a witch's oven.
A witch's oven, so that could do it.
I don't know if they had ye olde Eldraine microwave, but...
They have ye olde Eldraine easy bake oven?
Yes, absolutely. Sticking with green, since we're already in here, let's talk about the Gilded Goose.
Yes, the goose that layeth golden eggs.
Yeah, well, it itself is gold, which does that mean that it's like a horrendous, like, sound when, like, egg?
I don't want to know the... you don't need to tell me how it works, all right?
Well, it's a green for a 0/2 creature bird with flying. When it enters the battlefield, create a food token. Then you have two active abilities. One is pay a green and generic, tap, create a food token. So that's it, laying that golden egg.
Yeah, we get it.
And then, or just tap, sacrifice a food, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. So this is our replacement for Land Worlds. I'm honestly surprised to still see a one mana creature.
So am I. Even if it's, you know, something that isn't necessarily always available.
Yeah, you really have to build around it to use it consistently, but like it's still a one mana 0/2 flyer as well by itself. Like,
it's true.
It just blocks a fair amount of things. Yeah. Like I look over it, like I wanted to talk about like Fervent Champion, but then I'm like, how can I? There's a bunch of flying. There's a bunch of 0/2s in the format. Like,
there might be. And
nice card, idiot. Sorry, Javi Dominguez.
Like, I don't know how a knight on a horse is like can't break through a.
It's a metal bird. Like, that's how it can't break through.
But it's still the size of a regular goose, right? It's not like a giant goose. Why can't the horse?
Well,
ride?
The fervent rider or whatever is only a 1/1. Maybe it's a little teeny. I don't know how big Javier Dominguez is in real life. He's tiny.
So he's just like a very tiny man riding like little Sebastian in the battle.
Yeah, it's like a Don Quixote situation. It's like everyone else is like doing real things, and he's tilting at golden gooses.
But everyone loves him, and that's why he can get other knights +1.
Oh yeah, no, they all like bet on it and everything. So, but yeah, this is just a good blocker. And honestly, like compared to other like one mana creator, like this late game off the top is its own engine. Like, you can just have him make food, buys you time, you know, maybe you're using those foods to bring back a Troll King, you know. So, I think this card is going to be all over the place in Eldritch Standard.
Yeah. It does the things that you want it to do. And I don't know what more you can really say about it. It's not necessarily like super exciting it's not as exciting as when we got Lanterwo Elves back, but it's still like an interesting card to be able to play with in your green X decks. So,
absolutely. I want it now. Daddy.
So next up is a card that is...
Right after Fervent Champion.
That is true, but it's Fires of Invention, which is 3 generic and a red for an enchantment. And like, once you hear like it's a red enchantment, like it's either gonna be like the worst card you've ever read in the entirety of your life, or probably something that might be bannable. Because
it could be like Aggressive Mining, where everyone went, all right.
Aggressive Mining, one of the worst cards you've ever read.
Oh, that's not true.
In the entirety of your life. Or Sneak Attack, one of the most busted cards that could have ever existed. Magic.
Fair enough. One is this one?
You be the judge of that, public.
TBD.
You can cast spells only during your turn. And you can cast no more than 2 spells each turn. All right? That sounds bad. The second paragraph better make up for it. It says, you may cast spells with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of lands you control without paying their mana cost. So you get to cast 2 free spells.
Yes.
Every one of your turns. And then nothing on your opponent's turn, which... Right. It would be pretty busted if you could cast things on your opponent's turn, obviously.
Yes, it would. You'd be with many spells.
But people are already starting to, like...
Try and break this.
Try to break this. And through various means, one of them being Niv-Mizzet Reborn.
That would be a way to do it. I think it's important here, once you reach that CMC threshold, then, like, color restrictions obviously don't count. You can just cast
Correct.
It. And like we're getting a whole wave of utility lands to go along with this, you know what I mean? So you can be doing things with your mana while you're casting your free spells. But I do think you've really got to make those free spells count, because once you turn off interaction with your opponent, yeah, it better be Niv-Mizzet. You know what I mean? It better be something very, very good. And I don't know if Standard always has the best options for things like this.
No.
But maybe. It's certainly very powerful.
So I'm going to tell you a card that you should all be aware of in case this gets out of hand. Her name is Lavinia, Azorius Renegade. she is a line of text that says, whenever an opponent casts a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So it is a blue and a white as your safety valve for this, but it does exist.
Good to know.
I think like first seeing this card, you're like, I don't know. This card could be pretty bad. It has a lot of downside, but clearly people are very, very passionate about it. And there have been some, if you're on Magic Twitter at all, some pretty interesting brews, to say the least. And one of them is just like, obviously a Niv-Mizzet sort of 5-color brew. Another one's just like a mono red, like mid-range brew, which is kind of, an interesting way to take that.
Just wants to cast its spells, man. Here's the thing. Once you start chaining, if you get to cast 2 5 drops the turn after you untap with this, or even the turn you cast this, you cast another free spell. Like, the decks, maybe they can't win via card advantage that way, but they can certainly win with a mana advantage that way. And I think like that's something to remember. Like, that's a supreme mana advantage.
Yeah.
So,
Another card to kind of consider with this that we're not talking about, but is Escape to the Wilds, which is the souped up light up the stage, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that is, actually comes with a way to ramp, because it lets you play an additional land card. And those could be best friends in the entirety of the format. So certainly an interesting card. And if people see a way to cast something for free, they'll probably try real hard to do it.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So that brings us to our next card,
which is the Great Henge,
which is another way to reduce the cost of something.
So this is a 7 generic green for a legendary artifact. This spell costs X less to cast, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. Tap, add 2 green, you gain 2 life. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a plus one counter on it and draw a card. Now, I want to tell you a story about a card that I got to play in Standard that was nutso busted, and every time I see it like in like Legacy Legacy Cube, I have to really, really stop myself and think about it because of how good it is. And that card was Mirari's Wake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the doubled your mana.
Yeah.
That gave all your creatures +1/+1. Well, when I look at this, it doesn't double your mana, but it does add 2 mana.
Yeah.
It does gain 2 life, which I don't know if you ever played with Pristine Talisman, but that card's unbeatable. Here's 2 of them. And the your Mari's Way gave your creatures plus one, plus one. Well, this gives a counter. So even if you get rid of the Great Henge, no, they're still beefy.
They're still
and
big.
And you draw a card.
You do, in fact, do that.
Like, what's the cube where you just staple random effects to a card? Let's just staple and draw a card to Mirari's Wake, because that's...
Scar Cube.
Yeah, that's it.
Scar Cube, Mirari's Wake.
I mean, if you look at this, if you have four power, right? If you have a four power creature in play, or four power creature makes this, a five mana spell.
Yep.
Right? So you can play this on curve in your green deck, and then you're just going off. Like, then you're just going to town for sure. So... this card is very scary to me. I think like there are going to be some decks. I think Morgan posted a picture of a deck.
So there was the streamer preview event that went on. So Andrea Mengucci was playing a black green deck, taking advantage of Rotting Regisaur in this.
Yeah,
which
weird.
Makes the it Great Henge two green mana. What a deal!
If you have to discard a card for the Regisaur, that's fine. Every time you cast another creature, you'll just draw a damn card. So what did it cost? I apologize.
It's all right. We get one.
But Great Henge. We're looking at that cycle of artifacts, and I think we're going to talk about some other ones for Brawl.
I think the only one technically not talking about is the blue one,
the mirror,
which is probably still fine and worth talking about.
Yeah,
like, in all
maybe
honesty.
Maybe it's
I don't
pretty
know.
Slow.
It is slow, like for Brawl. Like yeah, sure, like fair. you're playing it probably.
But this one feels like the one that's really the closest to me. I do think Embercleave has a chance to see some standard play.
Yeah.
But that's definitely a Brawl machine.
Yeah.
But like the Great Henge, like I think spawns archetypes. Like you take a little bit of this, a little bit of Anissa, and then you just go.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Anissa's still
Yeah, Anissa's still here.
God.
You know how you make a 3/3, and then all your forest tap for double mana. You can cast this real easy.
Then it's just Mirari.
Then
you just have Mirari's Wake.
Oh,
they just put it in two cards. All right. Well, I don't know what you're planning on doing in standard, but what we just described sounds pretty all right.
So in this set, Nissa goes to the Great Henge, and Karn's like, this feels familiar. Why does this feel so familiar?
I feel like I've seen this before.
Memnarch, is that you?
Are you behind that big tree?
Oh, my gosh. All right, we're almost done with standard cards.
Yep. We're on Oko, Thief of Crowns.
That sweet whale.
Now, I'm gonna put my wife on blast because she likes to say crayons as crowns. So now I can't help but picturing Oko just stealing your crayons. All right, so Oko, Thief of Crowns is one generic blue and a green for a legendary planeswalker, Oko. He has four loyalty counters when he enters the battlefield. He has a +2, which says create a food token. And he also has a +1, which says target artifact or creature loses all abilities and becomes a green elk creature with base power and toughness of 3/3. And lastly, there's a -5, which says exchange control of target artifact or creature you control and target creature an opponent controls with power 3 or less. This is Oko's an engine, right? Like Oko plays so well with the other food, all the other cards that take advantage of you having food of some persuasion. Obviously we've talked about the troll, but there are other things in the set that, you know, the goose as well as being another one of those things that takes advantage
of. Loose.
Yeah, you can let loose the goose. So this is a way that you get to have a planeswalker, which comes down, takes up to 6, and gives you some sort of advantage, and then allows you to kind of play this weird, whether you are exchanging things with your opponent, actually getting their creatures, or just, like, making food into 3/3s. Like, it kind of does just everything that you would want to do within a deck like that that's taking advantage of food, but also having a way to end the game as well, which it may be slow, but an army of 3/3s will still do it.
Right.
And again, let's talk about that 3 toughness thing that we've already mentioned. It's going to be significant in the format. I do think it's cute that you can make your opponent and you can turn your opponent's creature into an elk and then like, actually I want that elk. You can take this food token.
You can take this elk.
But I do think, like, out of the planeswalkers that we have, I don't think any of them are, like, terribly unplayable, to be perfectly honest.
No,
like,
I don't think so either.
Which is, it's been a while since we've had that. I mean, we had, like, M20, which had, like, 5 planeswalkers, so it makes sense that not all of them are really, like, you know, All-Stars, and then we had War of the Spark, which had a significant amount of Planeswalkers. But,
the Royal Rumble, right.
But comparatively to, like, another, you know, set where we just have, like, three, we've got a pretty wide range of viability from all these Planeswalkers, but I think Oko is the one that really shines. I mean, we can definitely talk about Garruk, and I just think, like, six mana is a lot in this format, and I don't know if he does as much as the other ones can do, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think the format's got to play around them, because we have two, I guess three technically, six mana Planeswalkers right now that are incredibly powerful, and at this point they're not seeing any amount of play.
Just can't make the cut.
Yeah, we have Vraska. Well, I don't remember what the name of the six mana one was, but it did see a fair amount of play
for a while,
for a little bit, but now, you know, but it, for the last 6 months or so, it just saw nothing. We have, you know, Liliana, Dreadhorde General, super powerful card. Cannot scratch the format right now. And Chandra, Awakened Pyre, or is that Awakened Pyre?
Awakened Inferno.
Awakened Inferno, that's what it is. Incredible card, has seen a little more play. But again, like, the power level's there, but the format really hasn't. So maybe if the format slows way down, that's
where it could.
And it certainly could, but then also Garruk is competing with Liliana, your Dreadhorde General, and Chandra, as we already mentioned. So I think Garruk is definitely very good, but I will need some convincing also to see that's the six drop I definitely want to be playing. Yeah, we talked about even the troll. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you just want to go food engine and do it that way. So it's tough.
And I think, like, when you look at our mana, I think it's significantly worse. So you can't go for, like, the sort of we had, like, the like, Sultai or, like, four-color Dreadhorde decks. Like, I don't know if we can do that anymore.
It's not going to be as consistent, and you're going to play a lot of temples.
Yeah. So that's where you would think you would see something like that, because, like, maybe you can, you know, do something, and maybe Garruk's ultimate is worth it for you for some reason or another. But and you don't have an engine to, like, gain life anymore. Well, food's too slow.
Like, yeah, realistically. The Explore package also, like, turns you off of playing some of these, you know, six mana green/green-black Planeswalkers as well. Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's, I just don't know where you would want to slot them in. That wouldn't be, like, I don't know if green black's, like, the strongest. So green black or green black X is, like, the strongest place to be initially in the format.
Yeah, so we'll see. But, like, you know, people are saying, like, oh, it's a lot closer to Elspeth because it makes, like, two tokens. Like, I've played a lot with Liliana through Brawl, but I've also heard that she's Elspeth a lot too. Yeah. Guess what? Neither of them are Elspeth's Sun Champion, because that card was so good.
The card slaps.
So next up is Fabled Passage, which, talking about some fixing, this is our real piece of fixing. I can't believe how late in the spoiler season this came out.
Yeah, and, like, if you listen to the Arena deck list, they talked about that too, because, like, a lot of people were making content thinking, like, oh, we're just going to have, like, real bad mana bases.
Here's our mana bases. But this is just a land, sacrifice it, search your library for a basic land card, put onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. If you control four more lands, untap that land. So this is Evolving Wilds that becomes untapped, you know, the later you go into the game.
Right.
This is going to be important, especially in two-color decks. It just is. Because...
And, I mean, three-color decks, like, period.
Yes, it depends on how many basics you run on those decks, because I think that untap is really what you're looking for here.
Well, so it only cares if you control four or more lands. They don't have to be basic.
Oh, my bad. You're right. Never mind. I evaluated that wrong. Okay, well, good to go. Nope, all of them are great.
When I initially read that card, like, that's what I thought, too.
Nope,
but
great for everyone.
This is going to be, like, a key piece of fixing. You know, obviously, you know, this plays as far as power level somewhere between a Evolving Wilds and a Prismatic Vista, but it's going to be super important for Standard as well as, like, Brawl.
Yeah.
I was hoping that we would get, you know, a five color land, and this is what that is.
This is what it is. Yeah, I like this design, and I have a feeling that this is going to play well, and this might become something we see a lot. Like, Fabled Passage is also a really generic name.
Yeah.
So, one of the land I want to talk about, because it was on my list, but we didn't add it to the 10 list, is we didn't talk about any of the castles, but I want to specifically talk about Castle Emberith, which is the red castle, enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a mountain, tap for a red. One red creature you control go +1/+0 at the end of turn. I think that was in my top 10. That was in my top 10. I think all of the castles are. Most of the castles are pretty good.
I think most of them are playable.
I discussed this, you know, in our show chat a little bit. Like, I think these are coming in play untapped most of the time.
Yes.
And I think that's the key with this. Like, if it's coming into play untapped most of the time, then there's not a downside. There just legitimately isn't a downside. So, but I think the red one is the one that just made, you know, like, you're going to be happy when that's sitting in your pile of lands, you know, at various parts of the game. Maybe that's how Fervent Champion kills the Gilded Goose.
There you go.
He goes to the castle.
He goes to the castle. The castle makes him strong.
Castle Embereth is the one that's not technically a castle, right? It's actually just like dueling grounds, like jousting. It's like a big jousting pavilion.
Maybe.
Yeah, whatever. So the castle, I think, are all fairly good, but the red castle is the one that I think that will be the first to see a lot of play in Standard.
Yeah, I mean, it's the easiest one to like kind of point out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are Standard cards. We're going to move on to Modern here. And the first one we want to talk about was Deafening Silence. This is one white for an enchantment. And it says each player can't cast more than one non-creature spell each turn. So realistically, you know, this is something that we'll probably see in sideboards, but this is a pretty strong sideboard card. I think, like, when you look at something like, you know, Storm, or something even like the Prowess decks, like, they aren't necessarily top tier, but if something like this were to come up, we have a pretty powerful, like, turn one safety valve for those decks. You know, we have similar effects to this already exist, but they're just more expensive. So I really like Deafening Silence as a good potential sideboard option for a lot of Modern. So I see what you're doing right now, and you're being very, very silent, and I get it now.
There you go. I do think, especially if you're just a deck that's looking to cast creatures, or even like humans or something like that, like this is a cool sideboard card that you can cast, and then like you don't have to worry about the restriction. Other people do.
Right.
And that's important. Next up is one of the weirdest pieces of art in the entire set.
It's already been well documented that that Mike has a problem with the art in Hogak.
I really do.
Yeah, Hogak is banned in Modern. He doesn't have to like see it. I have similar feelings about this art. It's just too many lips. I just don't like it.
It looks like all the memes of like bad like yearbook photos where there's like three pictures of the same person. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't help that all the lips around her that make up her like lip belt are definitely like the Rocky just, Horror lips.
They just remind me of like wax lips.
it's just like the red lips, like full black background, just like telling you about the science fiction double feature.
Yeah, you should probably tell the people at home what the card is.
I can't. She brought the hush. This is. Oh, take me downtown. I'm just looking for some hush. That's what ZZ Top was thinking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
One generic and a white for a 1/2 creature fairy. Has flying and lifelink. Creatures entering the battlefield or dying don't cause abilities to trigger. So everyone's like, hey, here comes the party. And she's like, she's the library ghost.
Yeah, correct.
From Ghostbusters.
Exactly. It's like, exactly.
I think this card is certainly powerful. And I put it on my list, but then I was trying to think of, like, what deck do I want to put this in? And I don't know entirely. You know what I mean? Like, it being a fairy makes it a little bit awkward in some of the tribal decks. And some of the tribal decks are really benefit from ETB effects. Humans couldn't play this. You know what I mean? This would be a bad cyber card for them. Fairies could.
Theoretically.
But like, the decks that are looking for a small creature like this to shut those things off also tend to be, I picture them as decks that want these things.
Right.
So I will need to see where this goes. Maybe it is like a Hate Bear-esque deck, but like even Hate Bear is like Flicker Wisp. Or, yeah. If they're going that way. It really does depend on the build. You know, Hushbringer turns off the Strangler, and we don't like that.
definitely not.
Which is weird, because they're both doing the same thing. The Strangler's like, be quiet. And Hushbringer's like, be quiet.
Well, one's just a little bit more aggressive.
One of them does it with rope, and the other one does it with kisses.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, it just, like,
it will smooch you silent.
So it's the first time we've seen, like the or dying clause, right?
Yeah.
So like that's significant. Maybe this isn't. So we had what Takatli Honor Guard, right?
Right.
And that saw some play in Standard.
It did.
And technically some play in Modern.
It did see some play in Modern.
So like I imagine that the same decks that would want a Takatli Honor Guard may at some point in time in the format
maybe
want
this. Honor Guard serves Bolt. I think this card definitely like has the right text box for Modern. I don't know where it goes yet, and I don't know if it's needed yet.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have.
It's unique.
Yeah, for sure.
It's unique enough to be like. Maybe keep an eye on this card.
Yeah, so if you ever need it, step on up to the slab. Step on up to the lab, see what's on the slab. I did it wrong. Oh, no! Don't attack me.
Yeah, I'm sure people are going to get you.
I mean, I wouldn't blame them.
So next up is probably maybe the most busted card in the set.
This card is scary.
I mean, like, so it's Emry, Lurker of the Lock. So it's two generic and a blue for a legendary creature, Merfolk Wizard. It's a 1/2. It says the spell costs one less to cast for each artifact you control. So it has affinity for artifacts. it says, when Emry, Lurker of the Lock, enters the battlefield, put the top four cards of your library into your graveyard. It has a tap ability. So tap, and it says, choose target artifact card in your graveyard. You may cast that card this turn. Obviously, you still pay its costs, and timing rules still apply. So, you know, we don't really have that many artifact strategies in Modern, right? Like, there's really nothing that's going to be able to take huge advantage of this card in multiple different points during the game. It doesn't have, like, any sort of effects, like, you know, that are very important, like cost reduction, self-mill. People don't like those things.
Here's what I'll tell you. On Dominaria, because of the horrific things he did and for how long he did them, Urza's name is a cuss word. People say it like, if they were going to say damn, they would just say Urza.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like Urza's, you know, Urza's blank or whatever else. That's how I feel about this. This card's very good, and it's not going to do anything healthy.
No, it's not going to do anything fair. Like, this literally says, like, tap, cast your Mox Opal for free. Which is gross.
Hey, this card untaps with a lot of cool cards. One of them that I saw that was really interesting was Jeskai Ascendancy.
Oh, can you just go, like, infinite with this card?
And Jeskai Ascendancy and two Mox Opals. Not Opal. It's not Opal, right? Is it Opal? Let me just say that the
Metalcraft one?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was thinking that's Pearl. Anyways. No. Yeah, two Mox Opals, because it's non-creature spells for Jeskai Ascendancy.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So you cast it, and untap this, and then you Legend Rule the other one there. And then you get to cast it again. Mm-hmm. But you get to make mana off the Mox each time. Assuming it's real good. That's a combo.
That is, in fact, one of them combos I've heard so much about.
She looks like she's living in a stew, baby.
But, like, yeah. That's okay.
Yeah, and we're good.
Again, I reiterate, not doing anything, like,
healthy
in the format. You know, when you look at stuff like Urza, they may not need certain cards, so that may make their mana bases potentially more stable, better. They are playing Arkham's Astrolabe, so, like, I mean, what kind of game were we playing?
Yeah, anything they want. They can play anything they want.
I want to go back to the point that, you know, maybe Modern Horizons was just invented to show us the glaring flaws of Modern so that we can more readily ban them. And they're like, well, Mox Opal is almost there. Let's put a card that just, like, really hammers it home.
Yeah, so. Mox Opal is currently $130, so let's see how high it can climb.
But yeah, this card's just, it's busted. I kind of like it for, I think this card's going to be fun. Fun in Brawl. Like, I think in Brawl it's probably tame. Your card pool's, like, a lot more restricted, but it allows, like, some redundancy for some of your cool decks. So, like, I'm excited for it there. I'll play it there.
I could see, like, this card with in a deck that wants to cast the Enchanted Mirror.
Yeah, for sure.
Magic Mirror.
But this card's gonna be nasty in Modern. So just be, like, aware of it. At least it's a 1/2, so it's, like, theoretically easy to interact with.
Yeah, you know. Next up is Vantress Gargoyle, sticking with our artifact theme. This is one generic and a blue for a 5/4 artifact creature. Gargoyle has flying. It can't attack unless defending player has 7 or more cards in their graveyard. And it can't block unless you have 4 or more cards in your hand. And it has an activated ability of tap. Each player puts the top card of their library into their graveyard. So this is was it Cormis? Nope, that's the wrong bell. What bell? Ghoulcaller's bell.
Sure.
Whatever it is. There's a lot of this effect.
Again,
if you've played against the aforementioned Lantern deck.
Yeah, you're quite familiar with it.
Yeah, I think this is interesting. Those kind of strategies could play this and then just have something to attack with.
Yeah, you still have something like a blue-black, you know, mill.
Granted, they normally play Ensnaring Ridge, but...
Sure. But, you know, theoretically, that also exists. You also just have the fact that people naturally get larger graveyards in, you know, the Eternal formats, like Modern, like Legacy, so, like, it doesn't take much to get this thing attacking, and it's just, it's 2 and a 5/4, and in the early game, you're still gonna be able to block with it. It doesn't die to bolt, like, it's just big. And
it is big.
It's big and cheap, and typically that means that eventually something's going to happen with it where people are like, oh, I can just attack with this. It's just fine. Yeah, don't worry about
it. It's cool. And yeah, like for a lot of decks, it's very quickly.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's stupid not to be like, at least acknowledge it. It may not do anything in the format initially, but it's one of those things.
What it does, you're going to go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that's like, oh, yeah, that's the thing that you can, okay, all right. And, like, it's one of those things where you just have to be like, is there anything that you can do that interacts with this because of its power and toughness because it's so cheap as well? Right. So what's a way that you can abuse it in that method? Like, it's not just whether you just have a big beater. It's literally like, what are we doing with this high of a stat line with this low of a CMC? And I think it's definitely important to kind of take into account.
Agreed.
Next up. This is a card that's definitely going to be...
Yeah, this could have been on all the lists. It's important.
100%.
Yeah, we want to talk about more cards, but it's very good.
Probably less so for Brawl, because you only have one, but...
Why not? Why wouldn't you play this card?
I guess there's no reason not to.
Yeah, I mean, if you have...
You just feel like a true magician when you get to play it in your opening Brawl hands.
Just to make Keller angry.
I mean, that's a good enough
reason.
Oh,
you always have it. Yes. Yes, I do.
So it's Once Upon a Time. Which is one generic and a green for an instant.
It's more flavorful in Brawl, because it's once upon.
That's true, I guess. It says, if this is the first spell you've cast this game, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. And it says, look at the top five cards of your library. You may reveal a creature or land card from among them and put them into your hand and put the rest in the bottom of your library in a random order. So this is like an adventurous impulse. But one that digs deeper, and you can just do for free sometimes.
Also an instant.
So it kind of does a lot of... it's a free spell. All right. First of all, that's all you need to know. Is like it's some percentage of the time, this is just something you get to do for free. That alone is enough for people to like take a look at it. You know, I think most every like... You know, when you look at like cheap... Phyrexian mana cards, you know, some of them are banned. some of them still see some amount of play. You know, you look at the dismembers, the mutagenic growths, the noxious revivals, the gut shots, things like that. So like if those get some amount of play and they're pretty minor effects all in all, and the other minor effects are banned in modern, then you have
what are you saying, Morgan?
You have to look at this and be like, okay, this is probably, you know, I wouldn't call this a minor effect. This can be pretty significant depending on when you're casting it. Early in the game, you might be looking for lands. Late in the game, you're probably looking for a threat. But, you know, you're able to just cast it for free in that early game and really have a hand come together, right? And that's powerful. And it seems like a lot of people are obviously taking advantage of that. I don't think it's like a... Yeah, Gitaxian level of busted, right? Like
no.
Like, you don't just play as a 4-of and reduce, like, play a 56-card deck.
It's important
deck.
Here, even as a 4-of, it's still only the first one. So,
sure.
So, yeah, that helps make that, like, mitigate it. You won't feel that way again when your opponent's, like, neoforming you because of this.
Yeah.
But, especially in Modern, if you're playing this card, you're probably not doing something fair.
No, you're playing it in, like Tron... to some number, you're playing it in, like you said, neoformed in some number. You know, maybe I think if you're playing a green deck, you probably have to look at your deck and be like, "Am I playing this card?" Which I think that kind of, you know, routes back to previous frustrations that you definitely had of having these cards that are kind of like automatic de facto cards in certain formats.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to talk about it to like Arcane Signet, you know, maybe to a lesser extent because like you're not playing this in every deck, but. Probably considering it for every green deck.
Yeah, it's you certainly are considering it. It's, you know, I think that's more of a problem in Standard, where
yes,
where you're going to be hard pressed to show me a green deck that doesn't want a free spell some number of the time, and is because this being an instant changes how those cards normally work. Like thinking of like it's an Adventurous Impulse or Tracker's Instincts or Mulch or any of those kind of cards. Now, granted, some of those cards put things into the graveyard, whatever else. But like most of the time, like I think like what Grizzly Salvage is the one I think of that was an instant.
And that card was
that card was like really, really good, but like we don't normally get like that's what I'm kind of saying is like we don't normally get them as instants, and that's something that's interesting. So because especially since like they can also find adventures. And that's important. Like, it doesn't just search for creatures in standard now. It also searches for spells.
So, like, how upset are you? Because, like, if you're the person that's like, why does green have all the best cantrips? And then they, like, just print this, and you're like, and you just look at anticipate, and you go, but why?
Yeah, you look at anticipate. You, like, anticipate's, okay, here's the thing. Anticipate can't currently get Heroes Downfall, but this card can. That's standard. That's green. That's what they have done to green in the color pie. Morgan, you made me mad. I got myself upset.
I'm very sorry. I didn't realize you were one of those people.
Whoa, what? Those people, huh?
Yeah, the people that complain that green has all the best cards. But
well, no,
then again, like, we just kind of proved that point.
They kind of do. Like, green is losing the explore package. We better make sure they have something. Let's move on to a card that I think is actively bad. Drown in the Lock. Blue-black for an instant. It has sweet art, though, I will say. Choose one. Counter target spell with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of cards in its controller's graveyard. Or destroy target creature with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of cards in its controller's graveyard. I think this card is unplayable. Its text reads real nice. Like, yeah, I want both of these effects. But because this has no effect on what your opponent is doing, on your opponent's graveyard. You know, we talked about the Gargoyle. The Gargoyle does have an effect.
Yeah.
It builds to it. This doesn't, meaning even though it costs 2 mana, the chances of you doing something on turn 2 with this consistently in any format, I think is too rough. And you also get weird things like, you know, it's not as common now. You obviously, we do have a lot of Delve threats still in Modern, but like, we're still in a world where Murderous Cutsees play. Like, man, what if you try to cast a spell and someone Murderous Cuts something in response? And you're like, yeah, oh yeah, good. Good, this is what I want. And that may sound like a corner case, but like, you could be building to this card and then like, you tap low for a turn and your opponent forces through a Gurmag Angler and then you're staring at a literally worthless card. I can't. I don't think this card is playable.
I mean, like, it's a card that is cheap and can theoretically be powerful. So I don't disagree with you necessarily as far as like probably not being playable. But I didn't want to like overlook a card.
I don't blame you for talking about it. And some people have talked about it, but in standard, this really isn't a two drop, you know, 2 mana spell,
yeah,
which is where you want something like this to live because you can't guarantee what your opponent's doing.
And realistically, like something like this, it has theoretical flexibility, but in standard, I don't think it...
No, it certainly doesn't.
It does, because, and you'd rather play something like a Tyrant Scorn over it, right?
Well, for sure. And I think like in standard specifically, when some of your opponent's spells are actually going to be in the exile zone because they're adventures,
yeah,
like that's even worse. Right. So I think this card just...
But that's why I'd rather talk about it in modern, in a place.
Maybe you're playing Glimpse the Unthinkable, and then this card is hard counter, hard removal spell. But then you're playing Glimpse the Unthinkable, and God love you, I won't be doing that.
Sure. So, I'm just saying, like, those decks do exist.
Sure. Yes. Just like the M&M's commercial where they see Santa and Santa sees them, and they say they do exist.
Those kind of decks, they get
do exist
more and more... followers, I think, with every set that comes out, and they get like one piece here and one piece there.
Everywhere a piece.
Old Bill
Donald had a farm.
Start gathering, you know, the townsfolk, as it were.
All right, next up, a card that we'll probably see play.
Yeah, correct.
Castle Garenbrig. I don't know. This enters the battlefield tapped. Let's control a forest. Tap to add a green. Activate ability of 2 generic green. Tap. Add 6 green mana. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells or activate abilities of creatures. So this is of our castle cycle, and this is seeing a lot of buzz because of our Amulet Titan.
Or Titan Shift, or any deck that's like looking to play.
Sure, yeah, Titan Shift too. Titan Shift, I don't know if they're as excited about it, but I know Amulet Titan is excited because they can use an amulet to amulet like one of like the Seeker Scouts or Azusa to turn 3 or turn 4.
Yeah.
You know, power
but,
out a
but so can Titan Shift, right?
So can Titan Shift too, I suppose. I guess, you know, I guess, yeah, they can do that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is, I know at first glance, like, I you know, the comparison was to Temple of the False God. And that's, I don't think that's entirely wrong for standard. You're like, but like at the same time, like, you just have a land that lets you, like, cheat on land for a turn. Like, that, it's still powerful.
Yeah.
Like, it maybe doesn't do as much as you think it should, but, like, when you're like, oh, I'll just make six mana this turn as opposed to next turn.
Yeah.
Because
I can.
I did, and I had to do no work for it. Yeah, that's fine. I think that's pretty powerful. But yeah, when this casts, when something says tap, add six green mana, only casts this on green, like green creature spells or just creature spells, it better be casting Primeval Titan. Like, what else are you doing? So yeah, this is an easy one for me. I think it'll definitely see some play.
Next up is a land as well, which is kind of surprising because you may think we're kind of done talking about lands, but this is the common, you know, type to land. So it's the island. It's Mystic Sanctuary, and it is a land island. It says Mystic Sanctuary enters the battlefield tapped unless you control three or more other islands. And it says when Mystic Sanctuary enters the battlefield untapped, you may put a target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to the top of your library. So people have been memeing with this card, obviously, and with Terminus as being the card you put on top of your library, which isn't bad, realistically. So if that's like the base level is a meme, that doesn't seem that bad, especially in something, maybe, you know, blue-white obviously plays a large amount of basics and a large amount of just like islands as well. So like this is going to enter the battlefield untapped a reasonable amount of time. You will have a lot of instants or sorceries that you would like to return, some of them being Terminus, some of them being just other general things that are probably pretty good to cast again, you know, because you are already playing things like Snapcaster Mage to have that viability, so why not play this, you know, land that also counts as another island if you have another one that comes in after that happens, so it's just like they feed off of each other, and yeah, like, it just seems like a pretty
I like that you can fetch this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like you can end a turn to it, which is pretty great.
Right. So this has a lot of real interesting implications for, you know, older formats.
I think it's also a good transmute target.
Yeah.
For what's the Teleri West? Mm-hmm. The blue based living index. What's the enchantment they play? The one they gotta counter.
Days and Doing?
No, that's the spell. No,
that's the Aspertold.
Aspertold, yes, thank you. The Aspertold decks that are playing like Ancestral Visions.
Yeah.
I'll just put it on top of my library and cast it for another free Ancestral Visions. Thanks. Yeah, okay, you know what? I wasn't sure on this card, but you've sold me. This is interesting.
It has like a lot of interesting implications. Again, like fetching an instant sorcery and putting it back into play, it just is powerful the further back in the format you go, just because like those are what those formats are built out of, is those kind of instants and sorceries. So I think this card is like, it hits all the right notes. It's fetchable, which is an important thing to point out, and just nab something powerful from the graveyard.
Yeah, it needed to come into play untapped is a real cost, but there's enough decks, like you said, that are playing islands at this point that can do it.
You know, that's probably going to be a deterrent for some of the decks that may want to play this and just can't pull off like the island count to do so. But you know, I'm thinking that it being more powerful, obviously, in the sort of blue white control decks and stuff like that. But there's other decks that may push that shift that land count. Like you said, the Aspertold. You know, decks that maybe they are make this more viable to kind of see play.
Yeah. Next up, more mana.
So much mana.
This is Ironcrag Feat, which if you haven't seen, I think I saw Channel Firewall tweet it. I don't know if they were the original ones because I know they share the back and forth. But like, you just put like an artist in this, so Ironcrag featuring Drake, Ironcrag featuring like. That's very good, and I very much enjoyed that. So this is
good.
Generic red for a sorcery. Add 7 red to your mana pool. You can only cast one more spell this turn. So this is a pretty huge ritual. I don't know if you know this, but like Seething Song is banned in Modern. Now, granted, that's normally used in conjunction with casting a lot of spells.
Oh, right.
So if you're going to cast one more spell, better make it good. What 7 mana spells could we cast in Modern that might be good? Have I told you the good word about the father?
yeah. Card costs exactly 7 mana. So that's
weird.
That's a pretty significant thing for sure.
Yep.
So you do.
There's a lot of things in Tron that you can either cast outright with us or get real close to. Your Wurmcoil Engines, one off from Ugin, depending on what you're doing. That's pretty good.
I've already seen some like red, either like reddish prison lists or something pop up that like that are using this to power out, you know, planeswalkers or you know, like big Chandras or anything like that. Real quick.
Yeah, when we get Koth back eventually, you know, he'll want this, right? Like,
oh yeah,
he'll do something with it.
Featuring Koth.
Featuring Koth, please. Koth Watch 2019. But yeah, I mean, like, rituals are definitely something that tend to be busted to some degree. Now, obviously, you know, we have to temper our expectations with this just for the sheer fact that we can't storm off with this. It's not what this card's going to be meant to do, but it's going to be allowing you to cast something way ahead of schedule. Like, you know, you could be casting this as early as, like, turn two, right?
Yeah, I mean, in modern, definitely turn two.
Yeah.
So
you could technically do turn one.
Yeah, that would require a bunch of Simian Spirit guides.
But you know, something that like, so yeah, it's just people are gonna play this card. Like I just have a strong feeling that like they're gonna see this and try to do again, this is just going to try to get Simian Spirit Guide banned. Let's do it. Let's get all this free mana out of here. But yeah, I like this card. It's definitely like big and splashy. It's surprising like something like this isn't a mythic. Don't you see this in like feel like this should be like your garbage mythic that you open in your packs. You'd be like, oh, I can't believe I opened another one of these.
The art feels mythic. Like it's very cool.
You know, but oh well. And then the last card is Dance of the Mance. So Dance of the Mance is X white blue for a sorcery that says return up to X target artifact and or non-aura enchantment cards with converted mana cost of X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. If X is 6 or more, those permanents are 4/4 creatures in addition to their other types. So you can like, Mike was talking about this, but you can like just like kill people with this card.
You know, obviously like this card like wants like, unfortunately, Kirkland Iron works. So
yeah,
but yeah, it's weird. Can you use artifacts to make mana to cast the spell? Can you use artifacts to like mana rocks and things to tap for mana to cast it? Okay, cool. And then can you find a way to get those cards in your graveyard?
Probably. Okay, cool. People have been doing it for ages.
Like we talked about a couple ways to mill yourself already. Anyways,
yeah.
And then I don't know. Can we put like a hammer of Purphoros in the graveyard?
You could.
And then when you bring all them back and they're all 4/4s, they're going to go real fast.
Real like, fast.
Oh man, they're going fast.
You've never seen a chest of drawers move this fast.
Yeah, not since Angela Lansbury was a teapot. Have you seen furniture go this quick? You know, that's just me like messing around with it. But I think like, this card is pretty powerful. If you can find a way to cast as an instant, like I said, or give these things haste.
So like Teferi, like
that's possible, or even like a Quicken, you know what I mean? Something sure. Like that. I think this card has like real combo potential.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean like, you know, even looking at, again, to go back to Wyrsa, that's just our, you know, deck, our artifact deck du jour currently, but like there are, some of the lists are already playing Teferi,
right.
Time Raveler. So, like, having an instant, you know, a scaling way to just, like, at the end of turn, get back their combo is, like, frightening.
Yeah, it really is.
And just, like, you know, that deck functions off of having redundancy within its graveyard through things like Goblin Engineer. So, like, you're kind of, like, giving that deck the tools to pare down some of those things, potentially, and being able to function, you know, more efficiently with less mana issues, potentially. Again, Arcanum's Astrolabe, I don't know. It exists in the format. Are mana issues ever a problem anymore? Beats me. But it's just kind of important to really consider and take a look at when you're looking at Dance of the Man. So,
yeah.
The only honorable mention that we had was, like, Wishclaw Talisman, which is like Demonic Tutor on a stick that your opponent gets to control sometimes. And
Scheming Symmetry hasn't done anything yet, and I like that card better than this. So.
Sure. It is an artifact. So, Karn is a thing. Karn's a thing in Standard, but it's also definitely a thing in Modern. So, if you do this with the card in play, your opponent can activate it.
I guess that's true.
Which is pretty significant to point out.
Why won't this monkey's paw work?
So that's the only reason, like, I think a lot of people have been kind of pointing it out as being like, that's a pretty easy way to disrupt the symmetry of this. But if it's going to be busted, I would have to say it's more likely going to be busted in like modern or an older format.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, but that's our modern cards. So modern's kind of a stretch. We had a couple of like ones that are, we don't quite know, but could get there. But you don't want a huge set adding a bunch of like disruptive things to modern realistically, unless you're like Modern Horizons or what have you.
Right, right.
So half the cards we talked about may never do a thing except for, but Emery's a slam dunk. Like Emery's going to do something in modern.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Emery and like Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So for sure. And the castle.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's move into the real deal here. The main event.
Yeah, you know, a true king of formats, you know, Brawl.
Kenrith, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Kenrith of formats.
Let's actually start with our honorable mentions this time. Yeah, because I realized that too. I was like, oh, shoot, we missed it.
So, hold on.
The one just disappeared?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I put this on here. It's Corridor Monitor. It's one generic and a blue. And it's just a 1/4 artifact creature, and when it enters the battlefield, you can untap target creature artifact. I just like it for Vanifar. Like, that's a way to continue doing your Vanifar chains.
Yeah, you just like start chaining through and comboing.
So it's two instead of like your typical like three, which affects your things. You probably have less than one mana things to Vanifar into than two, but you can also just like play it, and that's fine too. And yeah, I just like it. I think like that's the kind of thing you want. In your Brawl, your Vanifar Brawl decks, to just get two activations in a turn. So I
do want to quickly mention the card that's next to that one in line, which is Didn't Say Please. I need you to know that one of my favorite cards to play in Brawl all of last format was Admiral's Orders.
Yeah.
Because like when you countered something, you're like, ooh, can't let you do that. Admiral's Orders.
So, there you go.
So I can replace it with another trolling counter spell where it's like, ooh, you know what? Can't let you do that. Didn't say please.
You sure can.
And that makes me really happy, and I'm sure everyone else really sad. our next honorable mention is Sir Conrad the Grim. Sir Conrad the Grim is our new sort of, I want to say like blood artist, but that's not entirely true. But in the same vein, maybe a little more expensive than a blood artist. Sir Conrad is 3 generic black. And I'm doing this while I'm trying to get there. I forgot they spelled Sir with a Y. For a 5/4 legendary creature, Human Knight, it says whenever another creature dies or a creature card is put into a graveyard from anywhere other than the battlefield or a creature card leaves your graveyard, Sir Conrad deals 1 damage to each opponent. It has an activated ability of generic and a black. Each player puts the top card of the library in their graveyard. So, you know, this in Brawl, these effects are very powerful. And this activated ability is nice. The body, you know, being a 5/4 is significant. And, you know, for decks like Izoni that we have, or like a Judith, or things that are looking for this effect, this is a good one.
Yeah, for sure. It does function in a lot of interesting ways. You know, this is a kind of a weird way to go about, like, doing something like getting, Spectacle, even, because it's, you can get it through a lot of different avenues. Creatures don't necessarily have to die. Sometimes you just, you know, mill a creature or something like that. Or you can, like, discard a creature, right?
If it goes into the graveyard from
anywhere other than the battlefield.
Other than the battlefield.
Yeah.
So it's weird.
You just have to keep reading it and be like, I think this works. It lends itself to a lot of different avenues of like enabling something. And then you can also just like figure out a way to flip over your entire deck and kill your opponent, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't think that exists within the format, but you could.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, no, that's it.
So there's another way you can build with that card. Just saying. And the last one is Epic Fail. I mean, Epic Downfall, which is 1 generic and a black for a sorcery. It says, exile target creature with converted mana cost 3 or greater. So this is on here because it gets rid of almost every creature commander.
That yeah, as long as our commander's a creature, it gets rid of it for the most part.
Again, if you're playing, you know, Lavinia, Azorius Renegade, she escapes it.
I'll ask why you're playing Lavinia, Azorius Renegade.
Because you just love blue white and you hate everything else.
You'll play Dovin.
And you loved Lavinia.
Okay. I want to mention, like, when you start evaluating removal for Brawl, it does get a little bit different.
Yes.
I would compare that card to the Price of Fame, which is kind of a Brawl All Star, which is 3 generic and a black. The spell costs 2 less to cast if the creature it targets is legendary, and it's a target creature surveilled too, and that's from Guilds of Ravnica. So, like, that card is, like, not, you wouldn't play that in Standard for the most part, no. But in Brawl, it's great because it kills everything, but it's cheaper when it kills a commander. So, like, you're evaluating your removal just a little bit differently. And I do think that Epic Downfall will see some Standard play. I think that, like, it's a main deck card in Brawl.
Yeah.
So, in the black decks and cats.
Sure, sure, sure. All right. So let's go ahead and start with our list. And again, these lists, I just want to reiterate, no particular order. Mike, I think you're the first one of Circle of Loyalty.
The Circle of Loyalty, yes. This is a sweet one that I'm glad, you know, these are the kind of cards that we would not have talked about, even in a Palooza, probably.
I think, like, Circle of Loyalty is pretty close.
Maybe.
It has to be a Knight's deck. Like, we have to presuppose that the Knight's deck is definitely a thing,
yes.
But if the Knight's deck is a thing, like, they want this card. This card does everything.
What's the Convoke artifact where, like, creatures get +2/+2 that you control?
Oh, Obelisk of Urd.
Obelisk of Urd. Like, it has to be close, like, to that card, right? Because that's where but I agree. This is 4 generic white-white for a legendary artifact. This spell costs 1 less to cast for each knight you control. Creatures you control with +1/+1. Whenever you cast a legendary spell, create a 2/2 white knight creature token with vigilance. 3 generic and a white, tap it, create a 2/2 white knight creature token with vigilance. So I do think that Brawl is where you're going to get your best chance at the legendary trigger, for sure.
For sure, yeah.
This is just the kind of spell where, again, like, I think even as in a dedicated knight's deck, this card's asking a lot. Like, you want me to play this over, like, Icon of Ancestry, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm doing that.
Icon of Ancestry isn't like a Swiss Army knife. Like, it doesn't just,
nope,
like...
But Icon always costs 3 and doesn't sometimes cost 6 when you get wrathed out. Yeah, that's my only thought with that.
Sure.
So, I'm not saying it's wrong. Like, Obelisk of Urd, like, saw a lot of play. Most of them because you have goblin tokens to pump it out. But I think in Brawl, like, this is where it gets sweet. You can set up some Brawl commanders. It's frustrating that we're losing so many good knights from Dominaria for this because, like, they never got a chance. Who's the black white knight legend? I don't remember.
Ariel.
Yeah, man. Like, I am sad to lose her as a commander for cards like this.
Yeah.
But this is something you definitely want in Brawl. It's a must answer kind of card that generates a lot of power.
So, yeah. Like I said, it's just it's an army in a can.
That it is, army in a
circle.
Can circle? You know, can's a circle.
Tuna can. Yeah. Circle can. All cans are circle.
Next card.
I'll tell you, man. Next card is Fae of Wishes. So this is a card that we are kind of interested in just going back to, like, having sort of wish boards, and actually has stirred some conversation within our own group, but I'll read the card. So it's Fae of Wishes. It's just 1 generic and a blue for a fairy wizard. It has flying, and it has an activated ability of 1 and a blue, discard 2 cards, return Fae of Wishes to its owner's hand. All right. But then it has an adventure. So it's a sorcery adventure. It is 3 generic and a blue for granted. It says you may choose a non-creature card you own from outside the game, reveal it, and put it into your hand. So it's a wish. And it's a pretty generic wish. You just can't search for a creature. Everything else is fair game. And obviously with something like Magic Online, you know, we know how this is going to work with, like, if you play with, like, Karn, right? You just are able to have a 15-card sideboard as a wish board.
Again, we've seen that in single player. We technically haven't seen it in Brawl yet.
We've seen it in, like, I think that's how it works in, like, 1v1, right?
It works with, that's not Brawl, though.
I know. I can't imagine it being different, though.
Yeah, we're not entirely sure. You know, in our play group, we do play with 5-card sideboards.
Yes.
Because we play a lot of single player and best 2 out of 3 as opposed to 4-player. So this card is definitely, in my mind, something that's going to make... It's going to depend on your play group for this.
Yes.
What your wish targets really do look like. You know, I don't play a lot of Commander. I don't know how these cards tend to work in Commander.
Yeah, I don't.
If they do, they might not. That's something that I don't know if that's something we don't look at.
So. I imagine, like, is there a like rule within the game that causes them to work? Probably not. It's most likely the same way that we do it, right? House rules.
Yeah, and it's so it's gonna depend on your play group. I like this card a lot, though. Assuming you have a chance to use it pretty effectively.
It has caused a discussion to be like, you know, we played a majority of the season with five card sideboard, so it's like, well, now do you expand that just so you have, like, we do already have a couple of, we have this, we have the Vivian from M20, and then we have Karn. So, like,
I was playing a deck with a Karn package that, like, I really wish it just had some more slots for regular sideboard cards.
Yeah.
And that's just maybe the burden of that. But
yeah,
it's something to consider.
But it's fun. Like, I think it's, it's good to talk about this card because it's good to talk about, like, taking a format and then, like, really wanting to twist it or make it to your own liking and make it enjoyable. You don't just always have to go by what the rules say if you are playing something at a quote-unquote casual level.
Your wish is those phase command.
Exactly. So, when you're looking at these things and thinking about Brawl, like, if you have a playgroup, like, talk to them and be like, hey, why don't we do this? Why don't you push new ideas and really kind of, push the format to something a little bit different, just so you can have, like, a different sort of context and experience. So, I think next up is Cauldron of Eternity.
Yeah, 10 generic black for a legendary artifact. This spell costs 2 less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. Whenever a creature you control dies, put it on the bottom of its owner's library. Then it has an activated ability, 2 generic and a black, tap, pay 2 life, return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield, activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. Now, I thought this one could possibly go in the standard list. It's powerful enough. It'll probably see play both in Brawl and Standard. This card's going to benefit from adventure cards a lot because, essentially you'll have spells, but in a deck like this, you would have tension, right? Like, you'd want to have removal spells in the deck, but then they wouldn't count for making this card cheaper. Well, now sometimes when you mill them over, they're just creatures and they count. So I do think that, like, it's going to require a dedicated deck for a dedicated engine to keep it going. I think some people compare it to, like, Whip of Erebos, and I don't think it's that card. Whip of Erebos, the lifelink was super important. Whereas this does cost life for this to happen, but the creature gets to stick around. So it's important, too.
And, like, you also have to look at it that, we now have, like, a pretty large amount of, like, reasonably costed, reasonable effects to reanimate, right? So, like, when you're looking at a Brawl deck, you want to have some level of redundancy if you're going for a particular archetype or a particular sort of, like, gimmick, for lack of a better term. So I think, like, we're reaching that amount. Like, I'm building a Lazav deck that's built around Reanimator. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, you have this card, you have a couple of the reanimation spells.
Bond of Revival.
Right. You have
Blood for Bones.
Yeah. And then you also have, like, a couple, like, you have the big 7-mana creature that gets back, like, like 2 instants of sorceries.
Yeah.
So, like, you just have, like, a bunch of, like, cyclical things that are going around. So you
Scholar keep, for the Ages.
Right. So you just keep doing the things that you want to do. And that's why you're playing, like, Embering in that deck, so you can get your Cauldron back out. So you're, like, you're just doing a bunch of different things to keep your engine going. And I think, like, once you get a critical mass of those things, that's when you start looking at those kind of decks. So they don't always exist within something like Standard or something like Brawl. But that's what, like this card is what helps me draw, like, into that. Because it's like, yeah, I want to do that sort of thing. And you also have a lot of self-mill, which is pretty important as well. Because you either need that or a way to consistently, like, draw and discard, you loot or what have you. So, but self-mill seems to be, like, the avenue that they're going with. So, I think it's interesting. I always like reanimation strategies when I can play them. So,
yeah, sure. Hey, look what happened. Your favorite card ended up on yours is the next one.
Oh, heck yeah.
Talk about Evercleave.
My other strategy is also a beat in your face in, so that's also my favorite strategy to play in any kind of form of magic. So Embercleave, it is 4 generic red for a legendary artifact equipment. It has flash, and it says this spell costs 1 less to cast for each attacking creature you control. When Embercleave enters the battlefield, attach it to target creature you control. And it says equipped creature has +1/+1, and has double strike and trample, and it has an equip cost of 3. And this card is, I still will lobby to have this as my commander every day of the week, because Embercleave is sweet, and Yeah, this card is... it's just like, you know, it's just a fun card. In something like Brawl, your artifacts and enchantments definitely have more of a likelihood of, like, sticking around and being useful, and even things that aren't, like, don't make the cut for standard, even though Embercleave definitely has the power level to do so. But even cards that are still, like, you know, on the cusp of being good, you know, that's their chance to shine, because they get to, like, exist in a format that isn't exactly, like, always hyper competitive, and that's why, like, Embercleave is exciting, because normally you'd see this card and be like, oh, that's cool, I guess, but it's expensive and it's, you know, not always going to be, you know, Team or Battle Rage or something like that,
right?
But I just like this card just does everything that I want to do, and like with playing Magic is being aggressive and like just having this sort of like instant speed, like take 10 or something like that. Like, that's just exciting.
No, it's very exciting. It's a splashy play. It's a cool thing to see equipped to a creature.
Yeah.
I think our play patterns will quickly have to, like, be going, like, oh, man, do you have Embercleave here?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think some of the commanders I'm excited for this about, like, I play Cranko. Cranko's excited for this.
Yeah, definitely wants this.
You were looking at Tajik. Tajik is, you know, is excited about that. Aurelia is excited about this. Like, this is gonna be in a lot of decks, and it's going to really, really punish some people.
Yeah.
So,
and like, this will end, like, I'm sure, like, this will influence when people decide to main deck, because, like, some of the options that you have are, like, Embra Shieldbreaker suddenly is becoming, like, oh, okay, well, maybe this actually slots into my main deck. Yeah. Maybe there's going to be enough, you know, with a singleton format, people have to branch into some cards, like, you know, that are, you know, artifacts that may not normally see play in Standard. So, like, suddenly these sort of narrow, you know, typically sideboard effects now have an application in the main deck.
But yeah, we saw cards like Vivian Reed be super important in the last format, because it just had the versatility to deal with a lot of permanents.
Definitely. So those things, like, definitely become more of a factor when you're looking at building your Brawl deck.
Yeah, and continuing with our red Tor here, we have Torbran. Or Torbran? I don't know. Thane of Redfell. It's Gimli.
Yeah, Gimli.
One generic red. For a legendary creature, dwarf noble, that is a 2/4. And it says, if a red source you control would deal damage to an opponent or a permanent an opponent controls or my axe, it deals that much damage plus 2 instead. This is a bonkers, like, line of text on a 2/4 in red. And when I think of, again, like, Cranko, and Cranko makes, like, 3 or 4 goblin tokens, and that's... Turn 3 is when I cast Cranko. Turn 4 is when I cast this and attack. Like, that feels pretty good to me.
That is a lot of damage.
Yeah.
This is the Brawl, like, the other one of the other Brawl decks that I've decided to try to make, just because, like, I just want to, like, build, like, a sort of a red mid range deck that is just designed to just kill you, I guess. I don't know. It just, like, it's just, you read it, it's just such a splashy line of text, and you're like, I just want to build a deck around that.
Yeah, you team this up with a Jaya Venerated Pyromage.
Yep. There's a couple pingers in the format, and you're like, I'm just going to do that.
Yeah,
like,
we're going to ping forever. Oh, you can play the Trebuchet.
The Trebuchet's in the list. Don't worry about it.
And Sorcera the Bold?
Oh,
actually,
yes.
No, that's Sorcera or Sorcera. I still don't know if that's Sorcera or not, but, I don't know the pronunciation of that C, but... Yeah, that's sweet.
She there. There's just a lot of good things that are good, and I'm glad they exist. Huh. It's unfortunate this card doesn't work with the Chandra take up the Chandra.
The emblems are colorless, huh?
They are colorless. They are not red. It is unfortunate.
How about Sundering Stroke? How do you feel like doing 9 to 3 targets?
That seems all right.
If 7 wasn't good enough. I like it.
Yeah, this is like, you know, I'm still working. All my decks are rough drafts. Like, I obviously don't have cards. Like, it haven't seen play or anything like that. But yeah, there's definitely some tweaks even yet to still be made with this. But I'm a big fan of this card.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm excited the next card made the cut. Like I saw it and I was like, yeah, I think this is important. It feels like a card that should be. I don't know where Magic's gone. That this card is like. Maybe okay. Not going to see standard play.
So the Questing Beast is the next card. I definitely think, like, I'm not going to be shocked if people, like, suit it up for standard. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
Card is definitely powerful, but it's a 2 generic green for a legendary creature beast. It's a mythic rare. It has vigilance, death touch, and haste. Questing Beast can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. Combat damage that would be dealt by creatures you control can't be prevented. All right. Whenever questing beast deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to target planeswalker that player controls. It literally does everything.
Yeah, this is the creature that when you're playing an MMO and you accidentally wander into the area where everything's star-star.
It's got a skull.
And like, it just runs at you and kills you in one hit, and you're like, what was that? It was questing beast. That's what it was.
Questing beast, yeah. So if you played WoW, it has like the gold... The gold dragon around it, and again, the skull, where yes. you would normally see its level.
You're like, do you think it'll be my friend? It won't.
It won't be your friend.
I put this card on here, obviously, because it has so much power going for it, but one of the things that, you know, Brawl, if you haven't played much Brawl, the Planeswalker commanders are there, and they are very good, and this does some cool things, like being able to attack the player and still get their commander, which is really gross and crazy. It also really gets around some of the token generating commanders. So when you think of like, they said like Dovin,
yes.
Saheeli, you know, those are ones, aren't they? Still going to get your commander dead.
Right.
And I think that is incredibly important when you look at how this card is going to function and gives green decks just another answer to some of these tougher planeswalkers without having to waste attacks, because that's where they can really fall behind some of the blue decks, is it's still like, you have to start trying to attack like a planeswalker instead of them, and then you make bad decisions. This is like, why not both?
Yeah, and like that's just a very important thing for like you said, for green decks to have access to within the Brawl format.
Just haste as well. Like, you know, it's just not something that's super common in green decks and adds a new element. In most of the green decks, you're gonna play this on turn three more often than not. So yeah, I like this card. Next up is a pair of cards, and that is Arcane Signet and Command Tower. We're sort of jamming those together as fixing staples in the format. Command Tower, we know, has been printed before. It's a land, says tap, add one mana of any color of your commander's identity. And then the Arcane Signet we talked about a bunch is two mana, and it says tap, add one mana of any color of your commander's color identity. So I like Command Tower a lot more than I like the Signet, because Command Tower doesn't take up an actual building slot. It's just a land. Yeah. But if you're playing Optimum Brawl, you probably are playing one of these in each of those, and I hope you are able to pre-order a bunch of the Brawl decks, because Arcane Signets are really expensive right now. So best of luck to you on that. But like, this does seem like those two cards are sort of the lock them in as number one and two when you start building a deck. So I don't know if we've talked about it as a group. I don't know what our intentions are with Arcane Signet. Like, if we're all just gonna like say yes, and then I don't know. Like, are we gonna own 100 different Arcane Signets? Are we going to like write Arcane Signet on a land and keep our actual real copy of Arcane Signet off in our token sleeves?
It's definitely an interesting sort of conundrum to have. Now, as far as I know, a lot of us have already pre-ordered like four of some of the Brawl decks.
Yeah,
so
that is true.
We will have a plethora of them. but I think, again, when you go back to discussing things like sideboards, you can go back and discuss things like personal ban lists with your playgroups.
Very true.
So this could be a card that you say, like, hey, let's not build with this. You know, there's other avenues we do have. Again, this is... Arcane Signet is something that could be important for fixing, though, for certain decks. So maybe you even do things like stipulations. Like, okay, well, if you want to build, you know, three color, then maybe we look at, you know, allowing you to use this or something like that. And being, like, not so black and white, but realizing, like, three color decks are going to have pretty rough mana bases for the most part, even with Fabled Passage. Now, Command Tower helps out with that. So it's all contextual. It's all what you feel comfortable with. If you don't like having that Soul Ring sort of feel to your Brawl decks, then like, okay, like that's perfectly fine. They're both very important for fixing, though, to be honest. Again,
yeah, for sure.
Optimal builds will have Arcane Signet, but every Brawl deck that you have that's multicolor should probably have a Command Tower. You don't need it for monocolor. Like, you're better off playing basics in the first place. So, I don't know, like, and again, like, Arcane Signet just kind of goes in every deck, so regardless, I've been building my decks without it, just because, like, I assume that in our play group, it's probably gonna get banned. That's just where I'm at in my building philosophy, so.
Yeah, fair enough.
But if I can put it in, it's gonna go in probably all my decks. Next up is Mirror Maid. So this is a fun new clone effect. This is the first time that we've seen a clone function in this way. You know, short of like you know, the Phyrexian one, because you can clone an artifact.
Phyrexian Metamorph, yeah.
Metamorph, yeah. But so Mirror Maid is one generic blue for an enchantment. It says you may have Mirror Maid enter the battlefield as a copy of an artifact or enchantment on the battlefield. So it's important that, you know, it's not going to lose, you know, it's legendary, so don't clone a legendary. Don't clone your Cauldron of Eternity.
You can clone their Cauldron of Eternity, though.
Could do that.
Like, that seems, that's more what I'm thinking with this. We talked about the cycle of legendary artifacts. We have the, you know, like, a lot of very powerful things in the format. And Mirror Maid just, like, says yoink to a lot of those things. And that's gross.
Yeah, just clone their Embercleave. Be like, oh,
gosh.
How do you like it?
Hey, look, mine is mana reduction, too.
Oh, man.
Man,
so,
do you get to equip it when you do that?
Yeah, I can't imagine you wouldn't.
Like, do you get the automatic equip trigger?
Yeah, like,
yeah, you would,
that's
right?
Part of it, right?
That's insane. Because
it says when,
because
it enters the battlefield as a copy of that, and it says when the center of the battlefield equips it to a creature.
Oh yeah, my body is ready.
Now I gotta say, I assume it doesn't say attacking creature. That would only be my question.
I think it's just equipped to a creature.
Yep, target creature you control.
Nice. Yeah, I like that a lot. But like, yeah, your green opponent has the Great Henge, and you're like, yeah, me too.
Me too. And how about that?
That's not. I think like when you look at, I think it was. Might have been Chisandra's like the value article talked about how like if you're comparing this to, like older cards like copy artifact, copy enchant, those are expensive cards. Granted, that's kind of some of their printing as well, but like I think when you look at Brawl and like Commander formats, Mirror Maid is a slam dunk.
Yeah,
for sure. Let's talk about another card I really really like, and this is actually from the Brawl precons, which we've only mentioned Signet and Land so far. The Brawl precons have a lot of interesting cards, but a lot of them are very multiplayer focused, like based on how many opponents you have.
Yeah.
So I'm not huge on those, but the card I want to talk about is Taste of Death, which is 4 generic black for a sorcery. Each player sacrifices 3 creatures. You create 3 food tokens. I think this is really powerful.
Yeah, I mean, when you're kind of looking at it, you are going to draw like similar like conclusions. This is can be, depending on what decks you're playing against, a wrath spell.
Yep.
And then like the food tokens, we have talked about how they have a lot of applications in the format depending on what you're trying to do. So like you could have your king out, right? And then have like attack with it, play this, you sacrifice it, and then you sacrifice your food tokens and get back your king. And you're like,
yeah,
your turn.
Yeah, that did it.
So this, I mean, like, depending on what you're doing, I think, like, you definitely have to take advantage of those food tokens in some way other than just, like, sacrificing them for life, because that's, like...
That's still not the worst thing you could...
It's definitely not the worst thing. It is the least exciting thing.
I guess. So, I mean, do you see these are candy apple skulls, man?
Yeah, I do see that. But I really feel like, you know, that you're going to be seeing this with, man... it really feels like this is a card that like the Yurok, the Desecrated decks are gonna like.
Oh, absolutely!
Want a lot.
I think the cool thing is too, you can build your decks a couple different ways. Like, you know, you can build it like Vakaya creatureless deck is what I have.
Mm-hmm.
Man, yeah, that's great. I'll just take those food tokens and a one site. You know, just go ahead and kill your creatures. And Kaya's probably gonna use those food tokens to gain life, and that's totally fine.
Sure.
But like, or like a going wide strategy, like I said, like an Izoni or anything like that, like. Yeah, sure. I'll get rid of a couple tokens, you know, for your real creatures. And these food also tokens are probably going to do stuff with. And then also, you know, we talked about a card like Liliana, Dreadhorde General.
Mm.
Like, this plays really well with her minus.
Sure does.
If you are, even if you're sacrificing your own creatures, but then you're drawing cards in addition to getting food.
Delicious.
So, delicious candy skulls. So, yeah, I think this card has a lot of application. 6 mana is a lot. And we are losing, you know, like we won't have to worry like Carnage Tyrant, for example. So maybe there's not a creature that you'd definitely want sacrifice effects for, but I think it's powerful.
For sure.
All right. We have one more here.
Yeah. Last one is a Fae Burrow Elder. So this is a Selesnya rare. It's, one generic, green and white for a 0/0. Creature, tree folk druid. has vigilance, and it says Faber Elder gets +1/+1 for each color among permanents you control, and then it has tap for each color among permanents you control, add one mana of that color. So you know, definitely perfectly serviceable in like, you know, your two color Celestia decks, but I feel like your five color commanders are really going to love this card.
Yeah, you I mean even your three color, but anytime you're adding a color, like because we don't really have four color right now, but three and five color. Agreed. This card is great. It's vigilance is nice, so you can get an attack in first if you need to. But I think it's more like, was it Bloom Tender? Is that the one that's like a $30 card that has the same line of text?
Yeah.
But it's only mono green. This being a green white card means it's always going to tap for two.
Right.
And like, so any deck that, you know, it has green white in it is, yeah, definitely looking for this card. But yeah, for five, man, I'll just like have five colors of permanence and then I'll cast my Golos, I guess, by tapping this. Hey, can I activate my Golos? Oh, I can. That's weird how that worked.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty interesting. And or Kenrith is sweet with this too. Are those going to be our 2/5 color commanders, right?
Yeah.
Because we're losing
Niv-Mizzet, obviously.
Oh, Niv-Mizzet. I forgot about that.
Yeah, right. He turns this on right away too. Like,
yeah, he does. He does.
He's all the colors of permanents already. So. Mm. So he makes you cast your commander, then you can immediately tap for 5 mana, which is pretty good.
Yeah. I think I like this with Kenrith a little bit more though, just because like if you have 5 color permanents,
that's true.
You can do all the Kenrith things.
Yeah, 100%.
Like all those activations.
We're definitely in a good like format to have a lot of like multicolor permanents already, so that's pretty helpful. I don't know if the mana is necessarily the best for that. You're definitely an Arcane Signet deck at that point in time.
Yeah.
It is cool to like see, you know, a card like this. Kind of exists with them in the format. I had a point that I was going to try to make, but it has left me at this point in time, unfortunately. The most fun interactions that I think I've seen that type, because we have another card, we have Happily Ever After, which also cares about having a certain amount, like having all the colors of permanence, basically, in that. And human tokens that get made in War of the Spark.
Are they human tokens?
Or citizen tokens.
Citizen tokens, yeah.
They're all colors.
Plain white celebration.
And it's important to note that.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think they're the only things, I don't know if anything else makes those citizen tokens other than plain white celebration.
I don't think so either. Yeah, plain white celebration though, like also can set your life total high enough for Happily Ever After. So.
Yeah, it's like it gets you like 2/3 of the way there.
I like that flavor too, because like if you have a plain white celebration, then Ravnica should get a chance to live Happily Ever After.
Yeah, exactly.
It won't.
There's a lot of conflicting ideals on that point.
Yeah, it's weird. And you're living guild packs a dragon who's definitely mostly is it. So it's like well, these other color symbols come right off.
Look at that. They're only temporary tattoos.
That's really good. I think the only card out of all of these things I'm sad we didn't mention at all was Rankle, Master of Pranks.
Yeah, Rankle, Master of Prankle.
I think in standard, it has a real chance to do something. Modern, four mana, even with haste, like, bolts are real. But without Lightning Strike in the format, I think that Rankle has a chance to do some stuff that is...
Oh, for sure.
It's gross.
I think he's going to be, like, you know, a popular, like, mono-black Brawl Commander as well. I'm going to probably put him in, like... the Lazav deck that I'm playing, just because it's like, yeah, you know, I can discard a card pretty effectively and make you sacrifice a creature probably pretty effectively. Like, you know, it's obviously, you know, something that happens to both players, so you have to build around that and have that consideration. But being able to do all three could potentially be very powerful.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. I think it's important when you're assessing Brawl Commanders. Brawl Commanders with haste are very, very good. So things like Rankle and the Questing Beast, but like in our play group, having things like we had Rada. And the fact that Rada just came down and can generate a ton of value the first time she attacked was super powerful. Daragaz just like being this like looming threat. Like haste makes your opponent have to play a little bit differently.
Yeah.
To not, you know, especially with you know, with Rankle, because like you don't want to get got. You know, it's like, nah, don't let him prank him. I don't want to get pranked.
I don't get pranked.
Don't prank me.
Don't prank me, you stupid YouTuber. overall, I think Eldraine is kind of getting a lot of people excited. It is presenting like some early like builds of busted things.
Yeah, I think people were like, when they first started seeing cards, like, is this Ixalan? It's not. It's Dominaria. Like, it's very powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, we have free spells. We have spells that get huge cost reductions depending on what you're doing. It definitely is opening itself up to be a fairly, busted set of format. So
there's a lot of mana cheating, lot of mana efficiency and mana cheating, and that's scary.
That is scary. So hopefully, we are hopeful that we won't have anything to degenerate. But as far as Mike and I are concerned, we won't necessarily be playing a lot of paper standard. For the most part, we'll probably dabble on Arena, but I'm really
definitely will. I love my standard.
I'm definitely more excited about Brawl that's going to be coming up. So we will definitely explore those formats, and of course, Modern. I don't think we're going to pick up anything new in Modern, but it'd be interesting to see how that format evolves with some of the new toys that it gets. So.
For sure.
But that is going to be everything for our frolic down Throne of Eldraine. We do appreciate you for listening. If you want to reach out to us, you can. You can reach out to us via Twitter. It's twitter.com/@yourinstep. We also have an email address. It's @yourinstep@gmail.com or facebook.com/@yourinstep. If you're listening to us via a podcast application that lets you leave a rating or review, we do I'd certainly appreciate it. We certainly feel that we're a 5-star podcast. And last time I checked, which is only a few days ago, you guys think that too, so we appreciate it. If you're listening to us via Legit MTG, thank you so much for picking up the show. Check out some of the other articles they have up there. I know that Mike may or may not have a new Brawl article going up.
I'm working on it.
He's working on it.
I'm working on it. But so, I've had time, which is not often. Not working on it.
Yeah. So definitely keep your eyes out for that and the other articles that get released there. If you're listening to us via MTGcast, thank you so much for listening to us. And check out some of the other shows on the network. Thank you again to our lovely sponsors, Comic Town. They are going to be having pre-releases this weekend. So if you are local, we may be maybe see you over the weekend. Maybe not. I know Friday is going to be a pre-release night. Obviously, since that started with M20, so that's very, very exciting. That may be the time that I go and do it, or I don't know, print out a bunch of Brawl decks and actually play Brawl. I don't know. we'll see. We'll read the room before we go ahead and make that choice. But definitely something that's very exciting. And of course, you can actually, if you pre-ordered any boxes of Throne of Eldraine, you can actually pick up a box of it. So that's pretty fun. To have, and since that's happened and been a thing, I think it's been a pretty great thing.
I agree. It could also, by then you could have also already become an expert in Eldraine Standard, right? Because we get that Thursday.
Yeah,
so
100%.
And we get that weird event.
We get that event. So starting Thursday, you can play with every card that's standard legal, as if you have a playset of them, and start brewing and playing. And I think it's a specific event that you have to play in, that you can do that. And then if you are wanting to play over the weekend, you can play in the event. If you go 12-0, and you get one shot, to go 12-0. And if you do it, you get one of every card in standard
plus some of Mom's spaghetti.
Yeah, plus
because you only have one shot.
You only have one shot. Do not miss your chance.
Mom's spaghetti.
I do want to give another shout out, of course, to our patrons over on patreon.com/@yourinstep. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Again, keep the lights on. We appreciate it.
I feel like I don't say thank you enough because Morgan always says it, but I am thankful too.
Yeah, Mike is very thankful. We're all thankful. And we're coming up on November. We'll thank you at our...
It's not even October yet. Don't even. Don't do that.
Well, thank you at our personal family Thanksgivings about how thankful we are for all of your contributions to the show. Because realistically, at this point in time, it's just charity, and we understand. but that's going to be everything for us this week. You have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.